I'm going to give you a very fast rundown of the mechanics of communication. The cycle of communication. Get an idea of a horseshoe. Turn on its side. All right, one tip of the horseshoe, we have Joe. Now, up at the curve of the horseshoe, we have, but the same side, the same arm that Joe is on, we have Bill. And we go a little bit further around the curve, and we have Bill Prime. And we come all the way around the curve to the other tip, and we have Joe Prime. Got that graph in mind? Got that graph in mind? All right, let's take another horseshoe. Face it the opposite direction. Now, one of the tips we will name Bill. We go up around to the start of the curve on it, and we have Joe. And we go around to Joe Prime. And then we go back to Bill Prime. If I've described this correctly, you have two horseshoes. The course of the communication is communication origin. Communication origin, let us say in this case it's Joe. All right. It is received by Bill. Bill, having received it, answers it. This is Bill Prime. Bill Prime, having answered it, it is acknowledged by Joe Prime. So the sequence is origin, receipt, answer origin, acknowledgement. Or, very briefly, origin, receipt, answer, acknowledge. Now we understand that one of those horseshoes is, just one of them, is a cycle of communication. That's a cycle. Now, both horseshoes make a two-way cycle of communication. That's a two-way cycle. A little bit different than what we understood this before. We've been understanding it too simply. All right, we have a two-way cycle of communication. And it works this way. Joe says, hiya, Bill. Bill hears this. Bill says, I'm okay. And by some sign, simply by his attention, by a gesture, or by a spoken word, Joe acknowledges Bill's answer. The total communication cycle is from Joe to Joe Prime. Or one cycle. Now, to complete this and make it a two-way cycle, we've got to take the other horseshoe, and we have to have our good friend Bill originate a communication. And he says, well, how are you, Joe? And Joe hears this, and Joe says, I'm fine. And then Bill Prime now acknowledges by some gesture or merely having received it, you see. Now there is a complete two-way cycle of communication. There are really no further parts to communication. There is really not an other to others section, since this is the significance which could never come into being unless Joe or Bill were part of that communication system. And in the case where you have others to others, you merely find our people at the receipt point. They're no place else. They are spectators. You get the idea? They are spectators. But we haven't altered our two-way cycle of communication in any fashion. We still have these boys at the receipt point. Now, on one of these horseshoes, at the tip there, we had Joe, and Bill was the receipt point, you see. He didn't originate Nancy yet. He's just right there at the receipt point. Silent. You got that? But we find the acknowledgement or the gesture or whatever it is, normally Bill, in the position we have just mentioned, would simply be silent, but he probably some little response there that isn't the complete answer, and then he answers, you see. Well, similarly, you have another receipt point back there at Joe Prime, at the other tong of our show. Hey, we've got this boy at a receipt point. So in one cycle of communication, we have two receipt points. And in a two-way cycle of communication, we have four receipt points, don't we? There are four receipt points. Two on each cycle are relatively silent. And there's the position of the other to others. This fellow is observing. He is an observer. Now, the one thing this universe or any other universe tries to convince you of is the fact that you should be silent. That the truth is actually silence. That there is silence. And one was not communicating. A wise old owl sat in a hoak. The more he saw, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Why can't we all? Poppycock and patterdash of this character is the wolf in the wharf of this universe. The only thing you can do to be punished in this universe is to communicate. That's the only crime there is in the whole universe, communicate. And that is the only way a Satan can go to his death. Stop communicating. You'll find your pretty clear hung up everywhere. He stopped communicating. Because when he stopped communicating, he stopped making time. He stopped making a shift in motion of particles. The consideration of time was going forward. He put time into another determined characteristic. Of course we find a psychologist involved in a spectator science.
If I just sit here long enough, maybe I'll see something.
That is the way they go. So of course we find these people not originating anything. Because that's the biggest scarcity of all. Now, how does a person get into a point where he hits just these receipt points, which is to say, the primary receipt point, you know, Joe over here at the edge of the horseshoe says, how are you, Bill? Now, Bill is the primary receipt point, then Bill answers, and we come back here to the acknowledgement point, which is our friend Joe Prime. All right. These people, as they converse, get into a myriad of complexities, of significances, all kinds of aberrations on the line. But what is the first and foremost aberration on this line? It is not, in the graph I just mentioned to you, Bill Prime back to Joe Prime. That is not. That is practically unanimously believed to be the only possible way that you could aberrate a communication line, and that is, it's not true. The primary aberration on the communication line is a failure of origin. Failure to originate a communication. Failure to originate. That is the point. All right, let's take a look at this real fast. You're a little kid. You've been moved all over the world. You've been moved all over the country. You've been shoved from this house to that house and so forth. Every time you walked into a new group, you said, my name is Jack. How are you? My name is Jack. What are you doing when you do that? You're originating communication, aren't you? Perforce. You were the one who was originating the communication. And then you went to another town or another school or another grade or something of the sort, and you said, my name is Gene. And then you went around to another sorority and so forth. My name is John. And then you were shoved to another class, and you knew the fact you couldn't take that class, and you walked in and you said, my name is Mir. In other words, here we go. Time after time after time after time, we're physically originating. We can see this. It isn't as important to physically originate as it is to mentally originate. The physical side of it is simply something that gets the mental communication box becomes solid, and we have the physical side of the universe. All right. Walk in, introduce the originate the communication particle, originate the communication particle, originate the communication particle, originate the communication. Nobody comes up to you and says, my name is Jack, my name is John, my name is Gene, my name is Mary. Nobody says this to you. You don't have strangers coming all the time. You're not the vested interest sitting there. You have these strange people who wander around walking in the front door. Get the idea? Just out of that alone, what would you do eventually? You would begin to compulsively originate communications. You would be compelled to originate the communication because you're the only one that originates the communications. Yeah, I can. In other words, you keep playing this one horseshoe, one horseshoe, one horseshoe, one horseshoe, one horseshoe, and you say, my God, obviously there are no other horseshoes. Obviously, no other cycles of communication can possibly exist. All right. Now, most of humanity is involved in an exterior, this is a very, very deep one. This is real. Most of humanity is involved in an other determined causation for communication. Now let's get the idea. An accident happens. So they gab, 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 walla, walla, walla. The newspaper comes out. So they gab, 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 walla, walla, walla. So Marilyn Monroe comes out and you get gab, 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 walla, walla, walla. And they see a movie and they come home and they tell each other the plot to this damn movie. And I used to say when I was a little boy, I still had something of the writer in me when I was young, and I said that people used to come in and tell me about the plot of this movie. I almost used to blow mine or their brains out. I've heard more people come in and tell you the plot of a movie just as though this is what they've been looking at. They've been looking at acting, color, technology, bright lines, and so forth, and they come home and tell you the plot. The one thing that you could certainly do without. Anyhow, they have an exterior origin of communication which then swings them into communication lines. Follow this, they see an accent. That is what we know as the boot in the pants necessity level. These people can't act until they get another determined necessity level. They get down to a point after a while where they only act in terms of emergency. That is necessity level. It is necessity. It is an other origin of sufficient magnitude to put them on a communication line. Now, what is imagination? And how does imagination go by the boards? It goes by the boards in a very, very simple fashion. The individual stops originating communications. And that is the failure of his imagination. And we could say it works either way. But the truth of the matter is that he stops originating communications, he stops being an origin point on this line, and his imagination fails, and that's the way it goes about it. He can get back on the origin point and have his imagination revive it. To start originating communications on a two-way cycle of communication. Now we're talking about processing. If he were just to originate people walking up and out of the blue sky saying, hello, 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 how are you? My name is Joe. How are you? Hello. You'd all of a sudden find his imagination starting to wind up. Bonnie? His imagination would start to revive. All right, these boys who can only act on emergency, these people whose imaginations have gone by the board, let's take, for instance, a painter or writer who was once a painter, writer, musician, something like that, and he isn't doing so well these days. All you'd have to do is supply the scarcity of exterior origins. This boy who has been chasing all around the world, walking into new groups all the time, you know, announcing himself. We don't mock up masses announcing themselves to him. We simply mock up people approaching. Just the idea, see, of people approaching and saying, hello, how are you? My name's Iskowitz. Anything like this, you see? And we have this as communication origin. All right, let's look at pandeterminism. You know about pandeterminism, you better have it. Pandeterminism is the willingness to start, stop, and change along the dynamics. degree of pan-determinism which a person has is his willingness to start, stop, and change along with dynamics. In other words, to monitor other dynamics. That is pan-determinism. Self-determinism leads down to control of self. And control of self is actually a last ditch. Of course, that's worse upstairs than where man is right now. But this is still, self-determinism would be a last ditch. Now, in view of the fact that the universe operates simply because two things must not occupy the same space. Let's go this way rapidly. Two things must not occupy the same space. If two things cannot occupy the same space, you'll have a universe in space and everything differently attached, and you have high individuality and all that sort of thing. But if two things start occupying the same space, completely violating the laws of Alfred Korshevsky and general semantics. If they start occupying the same space, they do it compulsively and obsessively, you have aberration and identification. If it is done in complete knowingness, awareness and alertness, you just go into communication with everything in the universe, that's all, on a knowingness basis. If you do it on an unknowingness basis, an unconscious basis, you go into communication with everything in the universe anyhow. But you do it on an unknowingness basis with the learning. All right, so the difference between other determinism and pan-determinism would be the difference between knowing you're doing it and others doing it to you or through you. You know you're doing it or you don't know you're doing it. All right. Pan-determinism happens to be the highest peak point which we have in theory and practice today. A very precise definition of it, the operating definition of it, is the willingness to control two or more identities, whether or not opposed. Now, that is the action definition. Willingness to control two or more identities, whether or not opposed. You disentangle that, and you find out that the robber walks up to the guy and says, anything you say will be used against you, or stop in the king's name, or let's see, what do robbers say? And we have this boy does this, and the other boy puts up his hands and says, oh no, don't shoot, and so forth. He's not being determined. All the proper thing to do is to be back at the robber's head and go away. That's the proper thing to do. Well, now an individual, if he were pan-determined, would not particularly cavil at which side of this individuality he was on, or both. An individual who's pan-determined would just as soon monitor the robber as monitor the other body. It isn't really a definition which grows out of in addition to himself. You know, he would be willing to monitor other things in addition to himself. No, you see, that's an incorrect interpretation. Because if he's willing to monitor other things, himself is anything he cares to make himself. There isn't then a vested interest called himself. The total pan-determinism. All right. Now, however desirable or undesirable this would be from the standpoint of the mores of the society, it does happen that, here's a flagrant example, that on the second dynamic, a person who is insisting on being the male partner, and nobody but the male partner, is being very, very insistent upon the fact that his sexual partner is a female, and an other determinism, you see. And if the lady in this case, or the girl in this case, would be also insistent that she was a self, you see, and the other party, you see, was a male. I got this big insistence, you see, on each one being an individuality. Do you know that, no, if we reduce this to the complete state of insistence on the other individuality, there is no sexual sensation interchanged. This is a curious thing. The nymphomaniac, the satyr, are in this state. They are being so totally themselves, and insisting so thoroughly on everybody else being somebody else, you see, than themselves, that they have broken down existence to an impossible point. And they get no communication. Now, anytime you sit down and you say, I am here, and it's all over there, and I am me, and it is it, and they are them, you go immediately out of communication. Does nature please? Because communication doesn't happen to depend upon space. Communication depends upon the ability to be. Space is a mechanic. Energy is a mechanic. Even a formula is a mechanic. Now, I have just described to you here, the highest possible, it is the highest possible, echelon of aberration, at least in this universe, with this set of agreements. And that is this two-way communication and where people get stuck on these two horseshoes. They get stuck in that so thoroughly they can see only the mechanics. That in order for communication to exist, pan-determinism has to exist. Now we had Joe, Bill Frank, Joe Frank. And on the other horseshoe, we had Bill, Joe Frank, Bill Frank. Does this worry the fellow who can be at any one of these points with perfect confidence? No, it doesn't. It does not worry him a bit. So all we have to say to a free player, of course, is just be willing to be at all these points. Draw him a graph and show him what the points are. And just be willing to be at all these points, and the fellow's immediately clear. Unfortunately, this is not the case. He's sufficiently bogged down into this. He has agreed to it so long. This two-way cycle of communication is intensely averaged to him, and so he is not able to escape from this trap unless he's assisted. So you have to assist him up along the lines of furnishing answers and so forth, and it just works like a breeze because this is the highest echelon of aberration. These stops, stuck flows, resistances, compulsions, compulsive flows, and so forth on these two horseshoes, all right? Then monitors it out. Now, you see, as pan-determinists, we're very lucky that the universe is rigged. So the closer you approach pan-determinism, the more you're willing to be anything in the universe, the more you're willing to start, stop, and change and control anything in the universe, actually, the more universe you can have and the more space you can have, and it just works out gorgeously. Now, supposing pan-determinism didn't exist, supposing we were all, we had to be set on Korzybski's one thing must occupy its space, and this is different from that because two things can occupy the same space. This, by the way, is a total confirmation of the physical universe and tells you why the general semanticist goes gradually out of communication. It's his insistence on this basic law and his continuous agreement on this basic law that two things mustn't occupy the same space. That's right there. Korzybski writes practically about nothing else. He goes on book after book or page after page, book after book, confirming this fact that these things are different because so on. Of course, he gradually goes book after book and goes compulsively out of communication. You ever read Science and Sanity? Starts out mid-flight on the first page. It says it's the first page of the book, but you sure wouldn't believe it. It obviously refers to about four other pages that are missing, or a couple of chapters or something. It's a dislocated area immediately. All right. This law, this basic, by the way, this guy is tremendous. I'm not running him down. I mean, I'm just giving you the one single point that this guy was kept on that made it fail. We know there's been a failure in general semantics. We're quite aware of that. But where was that failure? It wasn't in personalities. It wasn't in theory. His theory is gorgeous. His mathematics is beautiful. It's just that one point, that insistence of two things cannot occupy the same space, and therefore they're different. These two cigarettes are different cigarettes because they're not occupying the same space. Or if they were occupying the same space, they'd be the same cigarette. Would they? No. I think both occupied the same space would be different cigarettes. It's a matter of consideration. There you have a dependency on space to make everything different for you. Second, you get into that rat race, you're really in a rat race. Dependency on anything to make anything different for you or change anything for you is real wild. Unless you're dealing, and you have to be very careful with this, you have to deal with the actual elements themselves. And if you start dealing with the actual elements themselves, boy, can you communicate, because you're knocking on communication barriers. It's rather going communicating, because you're racking up against communication barriers and going through communication barriers and so forth when you're communicating on this subject. It is utterly fantastic to be sitting and talking about communication. I mean, this is real wild to do so with any degree of success at all, which hasn't happened before. I mean, we're really doing something. All right. Look, if it were true that the physical universe was all true, and that this communication formula got this way, and the communication formula was unalterable except in terms of the physical universe, you know, you'd have to process somebody. You'd have to have people keep walking in the door saying, "How are you, Joe?" You see, and then saying goodbye and going away and walking in the door. You'd have to set it up in physical mock-up everywhere. You know, if you did that, it wouldn't work. That's why processing, this is the old gag, you know, you're processing in the messed universe, by messed universe, doesn't work. But processing in a fellow's own universe does work. It's because processing in his own universe raises his pan-determined character. And processing in the physical universe simply keeps pandering along to another determined situation. So, what do we do to cure this communication formula? Well, the first leg up on it is to adequately get it out of the road for the fellow so that he recognizes that in the terms of the physical universe there is an answer. But all the time we're doing this, we're drilling him on pan-determinism. Not all the time. We have his mock-up answers. When was the last time he made somebody else facing him really answer? You get the idea? When was the last time when somebody was talking to him, he didn't want to have talk to him? That he was 3 feet behind their head and sent him home. Huh? When did this happen? It must be late. Attack someplace. That's just a positive point. But we run it on a pan-determined basis. We get him putting these ideas around, these communication ideas around, and canceling out these silences by filling them full of ideas. By the way, the fellow doesn't even have to have sonic in order to make this work. He's just basically the ideas. He's spotting these ideas around. And he is taking over all the times when he met silences which he couldn't control. You'll find him in space opera and everything else if you keep on running this sort of thing.
Sitting up there in the lonely space, you see, with everything black around him, and all of a sudden a rock hitting him in the chest, you know, from some unknown area. Nobody to talk to at that moment. Awfully silent.
All kinds of incidents of this character run out, where he was being the only one, the only identity, where he was surrounded by silences. And so we have this situation where, with the processing, we rehabilitate the pan-determinism of the individual over all points of this curve. But the points of the curve we are not interested in are the silent points. We want him to then determine that they're going to talk. You understand? That they're going to move, that they're going to circulate. That we're going to have action, motion, in other words, light and time. Where there's been an absence of light, an absence of talk, and an absence of motion, where there has been silence, no time. That's the end of it. Now, actually, with those processes, we recognize with great clarity that it would be very difficult to run such processes on a person whose power of decision was shot to hell. So we have such a thing as HC. Let's take a preacher. He can't follow your orders. He doesn't know what you're saying. He's sitting there processing something else, actually. He's not processing. You're not processing a preacher. You're processing somebody that's processing some mass. The various problems that we get mixed up with. If you told him an order, he would do something else and tell you he had followed your order. He goes dead silent when he should be talking, and he talks when he should be silent. And he has lost contact to a very marked degree with present time. And if you ask him real quick, he'd probably tell you he was just getting ready to rob some of the dead at Saratoga. Whatever this was that this boy is doing, it certainly must be bitter. And so we have those processes which are immediately addressed to this betterment, which is forming a two-way communication with pre-clear, getting him into some communication with something, and then getting him around and running some AC on him and getting him under orders and discharging some of his feelings about orders and so on. In other words, we pull him up the line. We might even run some opening procedure by duplication on him. We might run the little handiness and so on. We get this guy right up out of any danger of being in a psychotic or neurotic band. In other words, get him up into the normal band, move him up to the upper end of the normal band with the six basic processes of which we know. That is, if he was not exteriorizable, we wouldn't care whether he was exteriorizable or not. If that. We could then start remedying various sections and sectors of these communication formulas he's at fault with.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
We started processing a psychologist. One of the unluckiest things that a Scientologist or Dynamicist ever undertook was the processing of a psychologist. This is horrible. That is because the boy is fixed over there on an observer point. We even find Einstein, great guy, we even find Einstein completely stuck on the observer. The only thing which a scientist has any right to do whatsoever is observe. He even describes this. He should stand at a hole in the wall and look through the hole at the needle of the meter. And all he should ever report is how much the meter wiggles. This is a direct quote, I'm not kidding. Well, now, if this is the observer is in a bad way, if the observer is in a terribly bad way, we would have to get him out of this sit back and look at what is happening in the bank attitude toward processing. So we'd have to snap him out of that. We would snap him out of that with a two-way communication with some AC. You know, a little straight wire, something like this. We get him up there to a point where he was able to observe and execute orders, something he's not been doing. He could move around. He'd be feeling lots better. He'd think this must be the end of processing. You know, I mean, the processing must be about all over because he's never felt this good before. We've got him up into the upper band of Homo staff, in other words, somewhere around there. We don't have his sonic on with Dizzy or anything like that. Boy, we better charge in there and remedy all that damn silence that has got him parked at the receipt point of the horseshoe. He's parked there. We never process into silences. Let's remember that. The guy we are processing is parked at the silence spots. Now the silent spots, the chief silent spot, of course, is the receipt point of the original, the originated communication. We got this horseshoe up here, and at the open top end, we have Joe. Then we swing in to the other end of the horseshoe here, and we have Bill. Here's a preacher. Where is this? Silent. He doesn't do it, Bill Fry. At least, for God's sakes, let's get him to be Bill Fry. What a terrific difference it would make if we could move him off of being so exclusively Bill and get him over here to Bill Fry so that he would then answer so that Joe Fry over here can get off of this cycle. See? Now, the only thing that happens to these boys, there's only two spots where being stuck is very serious. Now we take this one cycle I just had before, Joe here at the open end tip of the horseshoe, and we come in with this to Bill. Joe says, "How are you?" Bill receives this. All right, that's receipt point.
We call that receiver. That is stuck spot for pre-care. There is the point that he's going to move into eventually and stick at and study psychology. Now, let's look at the other point he could be stuck. Do you know there's another point he could be stuck? There's hardly an auditor alive that isn't stuck there. At least somewhat. And that's at the acknowledgement point. At Joe Pratt. You see, it's a different kind of a stuck point. It's a different kind of a receipt point. Bill Bryan emanated an answer, and this answer missed, to some degree, Joe Bryan. There really isn't a Joe Bryan there. The totality of the communication lag is from Joe to Joe Bryan on this curve. Now, compulsive or obsessive originator of communication is in far, far better shape than a person stuck over the receipt point. This guy's at least fighting moving into the receipt point. He'll move in there eventually, but he's making a good fight. The only trouble with his communication lag, if we're speaking of lags, is that his communication line is Joe. Joe. And he'll begin to talk about Joe. See, he never moves on around the rest of the cycle. He just compulsively originates communication. And without it being received, answered, or anything else, right? He speaks for Joe. So, actually, people find the most fault with this Joe communication. Or, if we take the other curve, the Bill communication. They think that is a horrible lag. They get upset about this lag. They get more upset about this lag than the first receipt point. That receipt point's the dangerous. This fellow out here was on the Joe, you know, compulsive origin of communicating consistently, is sooner or later going to slide in over there at the receipt point and get silent. Don't worry about him until he does. But he can still originate communications compulsively or obsessively. They're in better shape than somebody who's silent. Now we start looking around for decayed thetans or upset cells or something like this, and we find these boys are protecting, hiding the truth. The truth is silence. That's true. It is an ultimate truth. Only they're protecting and hiding an ultimate truth with energy. That's a different thing. They're maintaining that they're truthful. They're truthful. Look, you can't talk at all and be truthful. If you talk at all, even vaguely, if you go down the street and say, "How are you, Joe?" you're not telling the truth. That's not a truthful utterance. How are you, Joe? First place, you've got to pretend you don't know how Joe is. That's the first lie. Second lie is that you want an answer. You can look at it and tell, but again, expecting the answer. And so you get into thousands, millions, billions binary digits of mechanisms by which to keep some communication and motion in action. And when you slide out of this completely and say, "I'll tell the truth, it is all true, I will agree 100%, I will protect the truth," you did. And horrible. The necessity for a problem comes about through a scarcity of answers. But it's still better to have a problem in action or in motion than it is to have silence. Of course, silence is the truth, and a person should be able to be silent on a self-determined basis, or speak on a self-determined basis. But this is an awful quiet universe. So is any universe awfully quiet. And the thetan dreams up all kinds of mechanisms by which to have some communication. Then he has some time, and then he has some motion, and and he has some life. And in the absence of communication, he has none of these things. So we say that any mass or anything we have fun with or any problem that we are playing with and so forth is obviously a set of lies. And you and I, as auditors, know very well when we're looking at the free player that there's not a lot of things wrong with him that he just thinks are wrong with him, that really aren't wrong with him. But you know there really is something wrong with him? His silence. His silence is wrong with him, and that is what's wrong with him. He has fought silence and lost. And he will get over into a bracket of talking about the truth when he talks. And he will be stuck on this whole thing called the truth. Just as artwork is a consideration, bad or good, it's a consideration. Lie or the truth could be a consideration. But there happens to be an actual truth. And that actual truth is silence and no light. And anything that's got communication, noise, confusion, flow, or anything like that, has perforce to be a pretense. So we have to get the pretense before we play games. Another one of our factors falling into place. We have to get him up there where he can pretend. We have to get him up there where he can imagine. Because if he can't imagine, he can't communicate with anybody. You going to depend on all these lies to do your imagining for you? There's nothing sadder than this fellow who goes out and sits down in a car and just because it's nicely shaped thinks it's going to make some time or furnish some action for him. It's not going to furnish any time or action. He has to have every idea of where he's going to go, every idea of what he is there. He has to have the idea of what the car is. He has to have the idea of what he's doing with the car. He has to have the idea of who else he's going to pick up or take around in this car before the car has any meaning whatsoever. No mass has any meaning unless it is placed there by the thing. It has no meaning, it has no use, it has no action. When it gets into a total automaticity, the person is depending upon another determinism to furnish action for him. He's dead. He goes then himself into silence. And if he does this for 74 or 76 trillion years, of course he will settle down at last into the silence of knowing it's all being done for him. He's set. And when the auditor gets hold of him, the auditor gets hold of him, the auditor has to bring him out into the daylight. The way to bring him out into the daylight is to raise his pan-determinism. The way to raise his pan-determinism is by remedying the scarcity at these various points on the communication. Cycles. And you have to remedy the points on these two cycles. Now that is the road. Now, of course, raising a person's pan-determinism is also raising his power of decision. You know that a cycle, if you push him around in a room, this cycle is just doing fine. Walking over, touching the wall, letting go of it. You ask them first, you ask them, who's doing it? If they're real bad off, oh, no, you said, my God, I should never have asked that question. And so somebody who is, we're just going along fine here, and he says, well, he says, actually, he's damned, DSCN and so forth, talking out to this, that kind of thing, they don't want to do it. The best thing to do, obviously, is raise the person power decisions. We're starting off part C, opening the secret basic. Make up your mind to let go and let go. Ding, ding, ding. Auditor just wishes he just never mentioned it. Person is insufficiently in communication. He is too much in the silence. He is too much surrounded by other determinisms, which has far too much power on him to ever dare or adventure to make a decision on its own. This would be an utterly incredible thing. Yet a decision on one's own and the primary origin of a communication are cousins, if not brothers. decide, the biggest decision he can make, decide to originate communication.
Yeah, that's not the biggest decision he can make.
Decide to originate. He has all sorts of things. It's got to be original. It must never have been done before, you know. Of course, everything always has been done before, and therefore I put in lots of rationale here. But all it means is simply, I'll say, hello, Joe. This time, usually Joe walks up to me, you know, and he says, how are you, Bill? Well, this time, I'm going to say, how are you, Joe? Before he gets a chance. As a matter of fact, Joe is so unaccustomed to having things originate. Our communication with this set of these rather out points sort of a fellow, if a bit obsessive or something like that. But it would actually give him pain if everybody started to originate communications in these areas. See, people would come up and say, how are you, Joe? People walk into the shop and say, talk first, you know? Mm-hmm. They say, how are you, Joe? How are you, Joe? Well, Joe, what can we do for you today? You know, this guy turned on a somatic. It's that rare, maybe, in his experience. Maybe if you didn't have artists and newspapers to talk about accidents and morgues, and if you didn't have movies, offspring of the artists and so forth, maybe the society wouldn't talk at all anymore. Maybe you didn't have TV, or maybe nobody would talk at all. Huh? I believe so. If you want to make a little test of this, just start around into various places, stores. Very bad place to examine the society, through the clerks and stores. You know, because they're on a trained social basis. They have a social response. Place to do is you see somebody raking up leaves in the backyard. You know, that's all right. Just show up. And wait for him to originate communication. You originated one, didn't you? You showed up. By the way, this business of originating a communication is so hard on somebody, just on a stimulation basis, that the church auditors over here go up and ring on a doorbell, see? And they go and ring on another doorbell, and ring on another doorbell, and ring on another doorbell. You realize that they're originating communication, and originating communication, and originating communication, and originating communication. Nobody walks up to them and says, hey, you know, we've got something brand new that we'd certainly like to help you out with. Nobody does this. And that's why I tell you with some truth that in view of the fact that we have people who are willing to originate communication, they are willing to talk about two people, they are willing to advance an interpretation of theory, they're willing to advance theory, they're willing to talk, they're willing to outflow, I can tell you very clearly that we must have some of the highest toned people in the United States. You don't know maybe what the community or society level is. You would only really find out, not by ringing doorbell, because that's a trained response too. It would be by walking into ballrooms and dining rooms and around. How long has it been since you walked into a public dining room, you know, a restaurant or something of the sort, and had a couple of the diners look up and smile at you and ask you how you were? Or do they just kind of sit there like complete strangers? You know, there's no damn reason under this. It's completely irrational if they would sit there. You can explain it on the basis of privacy. You can explain it on the basis of they're out for a social occasion. You can explain it on a thousand bases. But it's all unreal. They are originating silence. This is what it breaks down to, they're originating silence. Now, when you, in your turn, originate communication at these people, you're sitting at the dining room, in the public dining room. Somebody comes in, they look around, they want to be kind of unnoticed. They're with a girl who really wants to be noticed. You know, they walk in and you're sitting at the table, you and a friend, and you were to look up and say, how are you people? How are you getting along? You know, they probably, in most cases, wouldn't answer you. They would probably shy away. Why would they shy away? It's because you actually could turn on a somatic with them. If you went on with them, you said, how are you? How are you doing? How's everything with you? How are you? How are you doing? Are you having a good time tonight? Do you guys really look dressed up? Never met him before, it seems. They either send for the cops or collapse and go to the hospital or something weird and wild would happen. Because you're talking into an origin of communication scarcity. All right, this society actually hurts in the teeth of an originated communication. It actually hurts. You go to a party, you've got something fresh and new to talk about, you just had an adventure of some kind or another. People either sit there like a bunch of hypnotized chickens. Or they go out and mutter to a particular pal of theirs in the vestibule what a goddamn bore you are. Get the idea? Now here you have the basic source of the somatic. This is the somatic. It is a line which has been pulled in, or pushed out, until its particles match the pain point of the tone scale. In other words, condensation of particles is passing right on down through an intolerable point. They will then, after that, get much solider. You're talking about unfinished communications, incomplete cycles, incomplete two-way cycles. You're talking about mass. You're talking about 10 grams. You're talking about facsimiles and so forth. Why does a person make a facsimile anyhow? Well, an individual makes a facsimile by resistance. They resist the environment to get a picture. But remember, there has to be an obsessive duplication in there for that thing to be unconsciously made. For it to be unconsciously made and to stay in existence thereafter, that's really quite a trick. See? Another thing is a dependency on memory. It's an effort to have something. It's an effort to have a communication with the environment which didn't communicate with you. There's a half a dozen things can happen here. But the balled up masses, the black masses, the upsets that people are in are simply unfinished, unterminated, unacknowledged communication lines. All right, let's go immediately into the anatomy of exactly what are these items. What are these items? The items that you read in. All right, let's look at a single cycle of communication, which is Joe, Bill prime, Joe prime, on that curve. And let's discover that there isn't ever going to be any noise at Bill, you see. Well, that is a receipt point. See, that's really no noise. And there is no noise over at Joe prime. No noise at Bill, and no noise at Joe prime, particularly. Actually, there's no noise at Bill, ever. But the noise comes in at Bill and Bill prime. So what people notice is an absence of Bill prime and an absence of Joe prime. All right, so there's an absence of Joe on this curve. An absence of Joe. An absence of Bill prime. And an absence of Joe prime. Really 3 points on the curve, right? Bill, the point Bill, which is the receipt point, is not necessary to remedy. Any point remedy. It's always going to be there. It's a necessary point. Your absence that you would notice would be Bill prime. It's only when an individual gets obsessively at Bill that you begin to notice it. Only what you're still noticing is an absence of Bill prime. All right, we've got 3 points there, haven't we, which can get deficient. From Bill's standpoint, Joe could be deficient, that is, originated communication. And from Bill's standpoint still, Joe prime could be deficient, right? So Joe and Joe prime can be deficient. From Bill's standpoint, the only deficiency is Bill prime. That's the real deficiency. Unless you want to consider an existence at Bill, see, there's nobody there. So, all right, there's two scarcities. Now, we have to look at the other side of the curve and discover that we got the same scarcities over there. And again, the big scarcities are the big scarcities in this particular case. From Bill, Joe Bryan, Bill Bryan. The scarcity over there is Joe Bryan.
Now, the basic scarcity all along the line of communication would simply be somebody to talk to. See, somebody to talk to, and somebody to talk at you. Somebody to originate communications at you. So these are scarcities. So all these points, there are 8 points there, aren't there? All these points, any one of them could have some significance in process. But what do you know, they scrape themselves out anyhow, almost anything you do, because you don't have to be too significant about this at all. Now the main thing an auditor notices in processing three queries, let's say the auditor is Joe, the main thing they auditor notices is a lack of Bill Prime. The thing that the pre-clear notices is a lack of Joe Prime. Pre-clear notices this lack of Joe Prime. Joe, as the auditor, as I say, notices the lack of Bill Prime, but what do you know? If an auditor is really alert, what he sees is a lack of the matching curve, the origination of communication by the pre-clear. Now, in processing, then, it is absolutely necessary for you, as an auditor, to furnish a little moving power there. So the pre-clear walks up and touches the wall and says, "Duh." We then consider, remember, all communication is merely consideration, that he has originated the communication. And we put him into the role of communication origin, whether he would or not. And we answer him by saying, "What's the matter?" And now he has to originate a new cycle.
He says, "I just had my grandfather's face in a coffin show up in a small picture in front of my face."
God says, "Who said so?"
"Yeah, sure is."
Acknowledgement. Now, the auditor, having done this trick, and maybe put in an originated communication, then just go on with the process. Till the next time he notices right fingers start shaking a little bit. Say, "What's the matter?" You made him aware of the fact that he originated the communication physically. And you make him originate one by consideration. But there's always up against the idea of putting in that second cycle in on the pre-clear. The more he can put it in on the pre-clear, of course, debarring on a lot of obsessive or compulsive flow of the pre-clear and unknowing this machine flow, why, the better the pre-clear gets, and the oftener an auditor can acknowledge.
Just go around Robinhood's barn to find something to acknowledge.
You can put all kinds of significance into this. You can put approval into this. You can put how glad you are. Throw some A into the communication. You can throw some R into the communication. So forth. Completely aside from that, we want to keep throwing those communications in there. See? And make that pretty clear originated communication. If we can make him originate communication often enough, his imagination will come way upstairs where it was. Quite fascinating. So we keep shoving him over onto the other curve to make him originate communications. We keep acknowledging communications, and every time we do this, we're supplying scarcity. He gets better to the degree that he is made to communicate. Only he doesn't want to be aware of the fact he's being forced to communicate. Got to be an originated communication. He originated one unconsciously, we make him originate one consciously. Every time he talks, we acknowledge. We keep the two sides of this curve working. Now, as far as in running this in mock-ups is concerned, you can pick any part of either two of the curves except the silent part. Don't ever run that silent part, because that's what's wrong with your pre-clear. You're just running right straight on downhill and into the woods and far away. You start running silences on him. Beyond this, you can ask him time when somebody was silent. He'll gradually peel off an awful lot of stop points on the tank. But this, again, is negative gain processing. Positive gain processing is just yap yap walla walla in the bank. So he's just make things talk. He will fit them into all kinds of significances. He's liable to try to put them into tremendous significance. And if it's don't count,
It's simply the communication curve itself. And all the time you're making him remedy these in mock-up form, you're restoring his span determinants. And this is the big trick in today's process.
Okay. What about social stuff, like people pretending they want you to... I'll say it this way. People say, well, how was your trip to London? I want to hear all about it. Short silence. And you know, I went down and I processed this preacher down here on 44th Street the other day. Yap, yap, yap. And the butcher said, yap, 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 yap. Gee, that was a very interesting trip you told me about.
That's Joe to Joe.
This is a very common phenomenon.
You'll find this boy stacked, by the way. This boy's bank is stacked.
Would it be therapeutic for a person to self-determine when they go out and eliminate communication?
Oh, I'm sure it would be. I'm sure it would be. He's liable to get a lot of backlash. He's liable to get a lot of anything.
Talk to somebody here, right?
You can do it with a mock-up. As a matter of fact, I have talked to people at random, and actually have a lot of luck doing this.